Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. We talk NFL and college football. I'm your host, Brad Fowler. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? We're back with another great show today. Holiday weekend behind us. We have Thanksgiving Day games and NFL Week 12 to talk about. Frank Reich fired in Carolina. What does that mean for the franchise and Bryce Young going forward? We got locks of the week. Plus, guest Max Chadwick, college football analyst for PFF, is on the show to talk about coaching hires, the Heisman, college football playoff, and more. But joining me to break it all down, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what is going on?
You know, Brad, in pre-production, as we like to call it, we were just talking, felt like we hadn't spoken in a month because of we pushed out a really quick pod for you guys last week, and then we had three games on Thursday, and now we're already at Tuesday, and it feels like it's been like a 2 to 3 week, like it almost felt like we were on a bye week, and now we're back.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It does feel like that because, yeah, like you said, we kind of put out the shorter episode. We got it out earlier in the week for you guys because we wanted to make sure you guys got some content from us before the Thanksgiving games and all that. We're definitely going to have to talk about those games. A lot of Week 12 games, like I mentioned, got college football later. And so just a lot of stuff to dive into, Alex. But good to be back on track with a regular episode, so to speak. Let's start with Frank Reich, head coach, Carolina Panthers, fired. Doesn't even finish the season. I think this was a guy that a lot of people thought was on the hot seat. I don't think very many people thought his seat was this hot. What are your thoughts on them firing Frank Reich midseason?
I thought it was personally unwarranted unless there was a behind-the-scenes type of encounter, something that we don't know that we'll eventually find out later. But to me, this is just, you know, because these teams are just billionaires' toys at the end of the day for the most part. It's cool to say that I have a yacht. It never earns you money. It's cool to say I have a jet. It's cool to say, oh, I own this franchise. And now David Tepper, one of the billionaires, this is his toy that he's playing with. I mean, if we just take a look, since he's gotten there, he's let Ron Rivera go. He gave a crap load of money to Matt Rhule. Let him go, owing him a lot of money, and now he just didn't even let Frank Reich get through his entire first season, who most people think is a competent offensive coach, maybe not a head coach, but definitely a talented offensive coordinator that would have been able to guide and help a young quarterback, but let him go. But let's talk about David Tepper. David Tepper, who also owns Charlotte FC, he also asked two coaches. So he's asked five coaches since he's owned the team since 2018. So that's Ron Rivera, Matt Rhule, Frank Reich, and then two soccer coaches. And then it also came out today that I saw from Adam Schefter or Ian Rappaport that they wanted CJ Stroud. So there's been a disconnect in terms of him just taking control, because when the trade first happened, we thought that was a lot for a guy that did not have a Trevor Lawrence, Andrew Luck type of grade to move all the way up and give up all of that capital, move all the way up. It didn't make sense to me then. And now it makes a lot of sense to me now that he, you know, has a little bit of maybe a complex in terms of wanting to run things. But it's done. And personally, I think at this point for David Tepper, for him, this team to even have any type of chance, perhaps, just go ahead and go and get Jim Harbaugh. Because then let Jim Harbaugh give him the keys, because he's not going to back down to David Tepper. He's not going to be scared. That's the one person that I have off the top of my head if I had to say who they would hire right now, and it's him.
If you have bad ownership, it just trickles down throughout the rest of your team and your franchise. And now Carolina has one of the worst owners in all of football. This guy has been a complete joke, Alex. You hit it on the head. Billionaire guy buys the team, comes in, and a guy who's been successful his whole life, he thinks he can instantly turn this investment into a win, and he doesn't know ball. I mean, that's just the bottom line. This guy doesn't know football. He might know business. He might know investing. That's great. But this is different. He doesn't know how to evaluate players. He doesn't know how to hire coaches. That's clear. He fired both coaches he's hired, and he's paying them well over $20 million each to not coach the team at this point. Is Matt Rhule a good coach? No, probably not. Is Frank Reich? Maybe not. But what a joke of a franchise because of this owner right now. And quite frankly, this only hurts Bryce Young's development. And also, if I am a Jim Harbaugh or one of these other potential NFL coaching candidates, why would you want to work for this guy? Maybe the biggest game of the week, Alex. Eagles, big comeback win over the Bills. Let's start with the Eagles here first, though, Alex. Jalen Hurts starts this game, and it's a bit shaky. 7 for 15 for 50 yards and a pick in the first half. They really had a hard time getting it going early in this game. The Eagles scored just 7 points in the first half, trailed the Bills 17-7 at halftime. Hurts got it going in the second half and in overtime, had some big touchdown passes and, of course, some big runs late in that game, including the game winner on that quarterback draw play that I think we texted about this. Everyone in the stadium knew that play was coming except Sean McDermott.
Two things that they're going to do that we know when they're in certain situations that they're going to try. One is the tush push, and the other one is Jalen Hurts taking off. They should have been prepared for this.
Josh Allen was pretty awesome in this game. I mean, he pretty much did everything he could do, carried this offense in a lot of ways. 2 missed field goals. Josh Allen, he did throw a pick in Bills territory. That hurt. But when they play like this, when this Bills team plays at this level, and I know they didn't get the win, but we saw the potential that this team has. We saw why so many people like them coming into the year, because when they play like this, they can beat anybody. They've just had a rough stretch of finding ways to lose these close games this year. This one, I'm not sure they could afford to lose. It's starting to really hit desperation time for them. It's been a crazy year for these guys, Alex. I was looking at the numbers here. They have the 4th best point differential in the NFL this year at plus 101. To put that in perspective, it's been 23 years since the NFL had a 6-6 team with a plus 100 point differential. This team is too talented to be this average.
I understand it. I hear it, but before we, myself and Brad, even ever spoke about me even being a part of this pod, so I'm prefacing what I'm about to say by saying what I just said, because I didn't say that for shock and awe or for any type of hyperbole. I really believed the Buffalo Bills were not going to make the playoffs. That's something that I truly believed from day one, right after the season ended. And Brad can tell you, I said they're done. If they're not making the playoffs next year, at least they can maybe make it down the line, maybe even make a Super Bowl. But as far as this upcoming year, they were done. They were cooked, and you could clearly see that they were cooked. Coming in, they're 1-4 away, so they're just a home team. So, and they don't have a run game, which we still can't understand. Being in Buffalo, New York, where they had O.J. Simpson, Thurman Thomas, and all these guys, they don't have a running game for when the weather gets the way that it got, similar to what happened in Philadelphia on Sunday. So when you go into these towns, you have run game, will travel. They just are an unbalanced team, and I think we're watching the end of the Sean McDermott era in Buffalo.
Now I want to shift back to the Eagles for a second here, though. It's now 8 consecutive wins for Philly when trailing by double digits. Pretty impressive stuff, because they're kind of the polar opposite of Buffalo in that way, right? Because the Bills seems like they always find ways to lose these types of games. It feels like the Eagles always find ways to win these kind of games. Now, look, they have the best roster in the NFL, the best record in the NFL, and yet they really haven't had a complete game this year. Now, we've seen other contenders like the 49ers and the Ravens just blow out good teams and look dominant at times. The Eagles just seem to, they kind of just squeak by every week. They fall behind a lot of times in these games. They have bad halves. They have bad quarters. But once again, I've said this before about them, great teams find ways to win games. But I just keep expecting them to click and maybe just play a wire-to-wire game where they look like the NFL's best team. But I'm starting to think maybe that's just not who they are, Alex. I don't know. This Eagles team, they're a clutch football team, and this Bills team just isn't.
We talked, I spoke about Philadelphia, in terms of they're very clutch when, even there's a clip that's been going around the world's internet, so to speak. And it's a clip of the 51-yarder being kicked. And then there's a shot of Jalen Hurts and Jason Kelce. They don't react. They don't cheer. They actually shake their heads because they felt they should have won it in regulation. So this team, when their backs are against the wall, this is not a team that you want to face. And the Buffalo Bills, just like a team we'll talk about later, had a chance to put their foot on their neck, and they didn't. They went into halftime up 17-7, and they let them hang around, and they let them come back. And this is a problem when you let Philadelphia hang around. And also, again, Jalen Hurts, who is leading the league in turnovers, although I know there's a lot of people talking about him for MVP, he is leading the league in turnovers between his interceptions and fumbles. So he had two, again, an interception and a fumble, and they still could not win this game. A team like that, that turns over a team like the Philadelphia Eagles, you expect them to win that game and put them away, and they could not. And you let Philly hang around, and they got you.
Let's jump back really quick to the Thanksgiving Day games. Lions barely escaped the Bears in Week 11. Then they lose to the Packers on Thanksgiving. This is a bad loss, and that Lions defense was terrible. Alex, I went back and watched the tape on this game because I was really curious to kind of see what happened here. And what I kept seeing was a secondary that was out of position, and it started right from the first snap. They had no pass rush in this game, and that certainly doesn't help because we know the pass rush is always so vital to how well a secondary plays. But a lot of it was just bad positioning and bad play calling. These guys being out of position, leaving receivers open, busted coverages. It was just sloppy. And when you have no pass rush and you're not getting after Jordan Love and the secondary is out of position, it just gave Love time to sit in the pocket and make plays down the field. Now, on the other side, the offensive line for the Lions, which has been maybe the best in the NFL this year, I think they played their worst game yet. Now, granted, center Frank Ragnow left with an injury in this game, and Jonah Jackson, the starting left guard, was also out. So I get it. There were some key guys missing from this O-line, but this team is suddenly starting to slip.
Yeah, and I've never been a true big-time believer in the Detroit Lions. And, I mean, let's just go with what you spoke about, and we can go back to the draft. Drafting Jahmyr Gibbs over a player like Christian Gonzalez, to your point when you said everybody looks out of position, guess the one player that would have been in position may have offset what would have happened perhaps in the front in terms of a pass rush would have been Christian Gonzalez. Maybe you would have had him on Christian Watson and he would have been able to make some plays and he wouldn't have, you know, had those long passes, but they didn't. They went with Jahmyr Gibbs again, who only had 11 carries, you know, and they still let David Montgomery out carry him. I still don't understand what's going on there. It just makes that draft pick. That draft pick is just going to stick out to me for the rest of the season. And every time they have a problem covering somebody, I feel the need to bring this up. But again, to your point, on the other side of that, Jordan Love, he was throwing some darts out there. They did not get any pressure on him. No sacks. I'm not sure about how many hurries, but and I think what we're watching is, and we talked about this through text, Brad, where we said we may have been a year early on the Packers, but two things that we know that we can say that we've been watching over the past maybe 2 to 3 games with the Green Bay Packers and Jordan Love. He looks like a guy that says, you know what, give me another year. And it looks like he's also, now that Christian Watson is back, and this is the, and think about this too, Brad, this is the exact same thing that happened last year with the Packers where they were down and then they came back because Christian Watson was hurt early in the year, if you recall, when he was a rookie. But then he was the hottest pickup in fantasy because everybody was looking for him, and he started having a connection. And you know what, Brad? There was something that you sent me that I wasn't aware of, and I was looking for it throughout text, and I just found it. We're talking about Jordan Love, and people are talking about, is he a guy, is he not a guy? And Aaron Rodgers, who everybody knew was a guy. The first 12 starts, passing yards for Jordan Love, 2879. Aaron Rodgers, 2897. Passing touchdowns, both had 20. Interceptions, Jordan Love, 11. Aaron Rodgers, 10. Completion percentage, 60% for Jordan Love, 64% for Aaron Rodgers. 86.8 QBR for Love, 91.2 for Aaron Rodgers. Both 5-7 at the same point. I believe that Jordan Love has made a case to say, give me another year. Give me a healthy year with a full year with Christian Watson and a healthy O-line and watch me work.
And at one point, Alex, we had the conversation on this podcast. Maybe they need to be looking at a quarterback in April. And we both agreed it might be time for them to realize, like, look, this guy's not a rookie, even though he's a first-year starter. He's been in the system for a few years. We expected more from him. But you made the point last week that it looks like maybe this guy has turned the corner here. 49ers destroy the Seahawks. Got to give credit to Geno Smith, toughing it out in this one, playing through that injury. He said after the game that the triceps contusion that he suffered 4 days earlier didn't affect him at all. Hard to think that it didn't. He didn't look very good in this game. And look, the 49ers make a lot of guys look bad. I got to give him credit for playing. There was a big question mark whether or not he was even going to play in this game. 18 of 27, only 180 yards and a pick. He threw another ugly pass in this game that probably should have been picked. I said it weeks ago. He just isn't the same guy that he was last year. And he's actually started to regress. If you look at last season and the really great year that he had, the second half of last season, he actually started to slide. So I think teams have really figured out what he does well. They've kind of figured out what this team does well. This team is limited with him at quarterback. And look, it's been a cool story, the comeback and everything. It's hard not to root for the guy, but he's just not a high enough level quarterback for this team to be a contender with him under center. But on the other side, when you look at the 49ers, when this team is healthy, they're just really dangerous. And since they got Deebo Samuel and Trent Williams back, they look like the team they did to start the year. They've got back to what they used to do on defense. And Purdy has been lights out. This guy has been super sharp. McCaffrey, legit MVP contender. He just continues to be a big-time difference maker for them week in and week out. Chase Young has been a great trade for them. He's been an impact guy on that defensive line. Deebo, I think with him back, it really opens up the playbook for Shanahan. And it just allows him to do so many things in this offense. It makes them really hard to defend because of all the multiple looks he can give you. This team is going to be tough to beat.
On the Seattle side, here's what I'll say about Geno. I don't think we have a different Geno. I actually think we have a different Seattle team. And what I mean by that is that offensive line with those rookies that came in last year was a big surprise to everybody. Wasn't a surprise this year. Everybody got a chance to look at that offense. As I always say, it looks good. And this is why I always say I grade quarterbacks on a curve. If you look bad the first year, I need to see what you can come back and do differently the second year. Or if you look great the first year, I need to see what you come back after the defense has had a year to dig through all your plays, dig through all that film, and come back and combat what you did. And the part that really sticks out to me is the rushing. I mean, if you look at what the Seahawks did last year in rushing, I'm talking about they had like 180 yards rushing, 150 yards rushing, like about three or four times they ran for over 200 yards rushing. There's too much onus being put on Geno, who, to your point, is not that type of quarterback. He needs to throw off of the run. They need to focus on the run. Once again, more on that later. But you need to put the emphasis on the run, and they just not have been able to run the ball as strong as they did last year. If you look at last year, when they were under 100 yards, they just basically lost. But when they were over 100 yards, they essentially won those games, or they were close. But because you cannot run, because that run game, Kenneth Walker's inconsistent, getting hurt, Zach Charbonnet hasn't been able to take off. I think there was like the first 3 or 4 weeks, they were in and out of the lineup with those two tackles both being out. They had to go and get the old Philadelphia left tackle, Jason Peters, to fill in and call him up off of, because they just had so many injuries going on, and which was part of the reason initially why I picked them to win the division. That offensive line was coming back. They went big on the defense, bringing back Bobby Wagner, getting Devin Witherspoon. I thought they were going to be able to have enough defense and be able to run, double down on the run, drafting Zach Charbonnet, that they would be able to be a smash-mouth, defensive-heavy team and throw when needed. And that's why I picked them. But with that running game the way it is, they're just off. But on the other side, like you said, having their full array with them, Trent Williams healthy, Deebo healthy, McCaffrey, Ayuk, Kittle, That's a lot. And that's gearing up for what we'll talk about later, for what we're going to find out, what we see, what's really going on when we get to next week.
The Cowboys, after losing to the Eagles, they beat the Giants, the Panthers, and the Commanders. Their next five games are against the Seahawks, the Eagles, Dolphins, Bills, and Lions. Now, the Cowboys have lost their two matchups against teams with winning records, but they have absolutely destroyed everyone else. And they destroyed this Washington team on Thanksgiving. This is who they are. I mean, I said it last week. It's exactly who they are. It's exactly what we expected. They lose to good teams. They crush the bad ones. Not much else to say here. I don't think we need to really break this game down. Dak's playing great football. The Cowboys are playing great football. But until that narrative changes, I still don't take them seriously as an NFC contender.
Yeah, I got to agree. And I think the one thing that I don't like about the Cowboys, and I said it at the beginning of the season, I don't like that running game. There was a problem with that running game. I know people really believed in Tony Pollard. I did not. I felt he could not get the tough runs, and they did not have a guy or bring in a guy. And I was pounding the table for them to bring in Dalvin Cook, which they never did, to get a between the tackles up the gut runner, which Tony Pollard is not. And I think they're going to get exposed a lot more when they get into the playoffs, when they get into some of these tough games, because they do not have a run game that can travel.
Alex, the Steelers fired a coordinator in season for the first time since World War II. In the first game without offensive coordinator Matt Canada, who you, myself, and basically everyone that has been watching this team or paying attention, they were all calling for this guy's job. They finally made the move to get rid of Matt Canada. Without him calling the plays and running this offense, the Steelers offense had its first 400-yard game since week two of the 2020 season. It's pretty remarkable how bad this offense has been under Canada. They struggled in the red zone in this game, and it's not like they absolutely lit it up as far as that goes. They had a lot of field goals, had to settle for a lot of field goals, but this is clearly the best they've looked on that side of the ball in forever. It's not an instant fix, and it's 1 week. We're going to have to kind of see where this goes from here, but it feels like this is a step in the right direction for that offense, for Kenny Pickett and those playmakers.
You know, if everything good that we can see and what it looks like in terms of having that output of 400 yards, there still remains the Kenny Pickett issue. Can I just give you something? There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 running backs, emphasis on running backs, that have the same amount of touchdowns or more than Kenny Pickett has passing touchdowns. Kenny Pickett has 6 passing touchdowns. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 running backs have 6 rushing touchdowns. Kudos to them, and I know this should be, we should be praising them, but there is a huge issue in Pittsburgh, and as ownership and as GM and as coach, if you don't call it out, and I know Mike Tomlin loves protecting his players, but this is a Super Bowl winning roster, and it's going to consistently be held back by the quarterback, and that window is going to close. They need to make some decisions at the end of the season.
Alex, I'm warming up my car for a victory lap. Now, I'm not jumping in just yet, but the car is warming up. It's in the driveway, and it's on my Saints preseason prediction. This team is garbage. Derek Carr was on a 2-year decline when he signed with the Saints. I pointed it out. I talked about it and how I didn't like this signing. I thought it was getting way too much hype. I thought this team was getting way too much hype. And the decline for him has continued. Similar to Kenny Pickett, the guy cannot get it done in the red zone. It's been hard to watch. I was down on them this year mostly because I didn't believe in him as a quarterback, as a franchise quarterback that you can build around. And I certainly didn't believe in Dennis Allen as a head coach. They're terrible. And actually, on a side note here, the NFC South is unwatchable. We can move on. Speaking of unwatchable, the Patriots, they continue to hit all-time lows. They lost 10-7 to Tommy DeVito and the Giants. And to sum up what we're really seeing here in New England, I got this from CBS Sports. They became the first NFL team in 30 years to lose back-to-back games despite only giving up 10 or fewer points in each game. Belichick has now lost two straight games when his team allowed 10 or fewer points. Before this season, Bill Belichick had only lost two such games in 28 seasons as a head coach in the NFL. This has gone way, way off the rails. I don't think anybody could have imagined a season like this in Foxborough.
You know, there's a stat that I saw recently. The entire time Tom Brady was the quarterback of the New England Patriots, he never went under center without mathematically being eliminated from the playoffs. So every time in the last 20 years that Bill Belichick and the Patriots took the field with Tom Brady under center, they always were in the hunt for a playoff spot, no matter whether they were in the front or going for a wild card spot. So this is the new Patriots. This is what they are, but you don't have Tom Brady. I won't go back into what I talked about a week or for maybe the last 2 weeks in terms of old rigid styles of coaching and not being able to pivot. But if you ever needed to see what the definition of that is, take a look at the New England Patriots.
Jacksonville Jaguars get a big division win over Houston. I don't even remember the last time this late in the year that we had two AFC South teams that were this interesting, that were fighting for playoff positioning. The Jaguars went on the road against a hot team. They made enough plays to earn the season split with the Texans. This is a tough loss for Houston. They fall to 6-6, but it continues to show me that they can hang with some of the better teams in the NFL. And you've got to love the direction this team's going. We've talked about them a lot this year, but they continue to impress me. Even in this loss, Alex, I was impressed with CJ Stroud and this team. They got another 304 yards and two touchdowns from Stroud. Texans defense only gave up 24 points. DeMeco Ryans, coach of the year. Stroud, rookie of the year. Locks.
I don't know if people understand being able as a football player, that's not a quarterback, but as a football player, going to the stadium every single day knowing that you have a chance to win. You walk into that building and you get on that field with a sense of pride, a sense of urgency, and you play your heart out, especially when you have a coach like DeMeco Ryans, especially when you see what your quarterback is doing. It doesn't matter if you're down 15, down 20. You feel at any point in time, our guy can bring us back. So you will continuously fight through no matter what the score is. I want to talk about Jacksonville. There's been a little bit of a regression with Trevor Lawrence. You alluded to it maybe last week or maybe 2 weeks ago. We expected this team to come in a little bit more explosive than what they were. And even though the Texans are sitting at 6-5, as well as the Titans are sitting at 6-5, the Jaguars just lost Cam Robinson again. One of the things I talked about with the Jaguars coming into the season that we thought they were going to be able to take off and we're going to see a lot more of explosion in offense. The reason that we're not seeing it from a fantasy side, as well as what we're watching on the field, is because of that offensive line. They let Jawan Taylor go. Cam Robinson was suspended for the first 4 weeks, and now Cam Robinson is hurt again. So that running game is suffering. There's a trickle-down effect that now they can stay in more pass coverage because there's not enough run lanes for Travis Etienne to get loose. So I think the Jaguars are in trouble because of that injury.
Denver is the hottest team in the NFL. Never saw this coming. And Russell Wilson, I think, has really kind of been reborn as a game managing chain mover of a quarterback. He's not the big playmaker that he once was, but he's playing a lot more efficient, a lot more effective football in these recent weeks. I think one key difference, though, is the play calling. The run game, taking pressure off of him, getting him rolling out of the pocket more. When this team was 1-5, we were not alone, Alex, in the media when we said they got to blow this thing up. It was really looking like an absolute disaster. It was clearly not working. And then Sean Payton and Vance Joseph, got to give them both a lot of credit. They were able to pivot on both sides of the ball. They're playing winning football now. They're not a great team, but they're playing good football. And the team's yards allowed went down in each of the 5 weeks following that Miami game. So we've seen a consistent improvement from the defensive side of the ball. They gave up 70 points in that game. It felt like the sky was falling. Now, all of a sudden, they have a real shot at maybe getting into the playoffs, which nobody would have said that after the start they had.
Salute to Van Joseph. And really a lot of, and you know, Russell Wilson also deserves some credit with his attitude and approach, because a lot of other quarterbacks would have given up, or a lot of other quarterbacks, it just would have been turmoil and hell. So he deserves some credit, but I give most of the credit to Sean Payton, because he moved off of the fact of what I said, that this guy is not Drew Brees, and you need to run the ball more than you pass, because that is when you get the best Russell. And throughout the last 5 weeks, we have been seeing a better Russell Wilson, who's even begun to use his legs a lot more and become dangerous in the fourth quarter when you need him to make a play. Sean Payton does deserve credit, and I think he is also going to put himself indirectly in the Coach of the Year race because of this turnaround, because Denver, where they were in the basement, they are now in second place thanks to the Chargers chargering.
Kansas City gets the big comeback win over the Raiders. I think, Alex, the development from their second round picks of the last 2 years, Rashee Rice and Sky Moore, I think it's taken longer than they expected for these guys to really develop. And the offense hasn't been where they thought it would be at this point in the year. It's not where I thought it would be at this point in the year. Rice had a breakout game. Maybe this could be a springboard game for him. Maybe this is the game that kind of gets him going. Travis Kelce is still a weapon, and he's still a guy that you have to circle if you're on the defense. But at 34 years old, he's had some injuries. He looks like he's slowing down a little bit. I'm not sure he's the elite player that he was. Now, he's still a great player, but I'm starting to think maybe those peak years are actually over for Travis Kelce.
I think Rashee Rice for me is on track, because he was a person, now just use a fantasy perspective for me, was I picked him up knowing that he probably wasn't going to be worth anything for the first 6 to 7 weeks. There were flashes, and now he still had a couple of drops, but this is around the time I thought he would come along. You know, this was a person that we highlighted in talking about leading up to the draft show. He was a person that we spoke about that could be a guy before he got to Kansas City. And then when he was drafted by them, I said, okay, he's going to be good there. I think the real disappointment here is Sky Moore. There was a lot of high hopes for Sky Moore, specifically in that slot. But I do want to say one thing about the Raiders. On script, Aiden O'Connell looks really good. This was a really good game for him, but he looks really good on script. When he gets off script, that's when you start to see the coaching issues, because this is a player that needs to be coached up. You have a rookie coach, and then you have a rookie offensive coordinator in Bo Hardigree. So Antonio Pierce, the matching of those two rookies trying to guide this rookie quarterback just does not bode well. And there's a lot of talk about he's not a guy, he's this, he's that. Some guys need to be developed. He's only played a total of, four games or maybe five games. Four of them he actually started. So he needs time to develop. These things don't happen overnight. But I wanted to say that about the Raiders, and to any Raider fans that's listening, myself being one of them, I think this is a key pivotal moment for Mark Davis. You have to make a decision what you're going to do with this team. Are you, and should you be buyers or should you be sellers in the offseason? The Jets have already put that out, that they're going to try and trade for Davante Adams. So you have two key pieces that can fetch you a lot of draft picks. One being Davante Adams, another one being Max Crosby. Both can fetch you a couple of ones and twos and threes, however you mix them up together. And you can probably get another three if you decide to throw Hunter Renfrow in there as well. Because you need to figure out what this team is. The one thing that I know for sure is Champ Kelly will be the GM of this team. This is the person that Mark Davis initially wanted to hire as the GM before Josh McDaniel became a viable option. So Champ Kelly is the one person that I know out of the regime that was previous here that they're going to keep their job.
Now, the most complete team in the AFC, I think, has to be the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens now 9-3, a half game up on the Dolphins, Jaguars, and Chiefs in the AFC. Not surprising that they beat the Chargers. That team's really kind of been in a free fall. We've been beating up on them and their awful coach every single week. I don't think we need to go there again, but I will say this. The Chargers defense actually played pretty good for once, so I'll give them credit there. But the Ravens defense, man, this defense is nasty. They don't have any holes. I mean, they just have players all over the place. It's a typical Raven style of team. Lamar Jackson is playing his best football. They have weapons. Kyle Hamilton, I want to highlight for a second, Alex. This guy has become the player that I thought he would when I ranked him as the top player in the draft. He's incredible. Talk about a guy that can just do everything. This team has as good a chance as anyone to land the top seed in the AFC, and they're going to be a tough out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we spoke about, well, I mentioned it to you when we were talking off air, and I said, I could not believe who knew. I kept saying to myself, why is Justin Herbert not calling or recognizing that that DB is blitzing off of the edge, number 24, only to find out midway through the game that number 24 was actually Jadeveon Clowney. When Jadeveon Clowney decides to say that, you know what, and he walks into the facility and say, I feel like playing today, watch out, because he's unstoppable. We've seen it at every step, every place he's been at. We've seen games in Seattle. We've seen games when he was in Houston. We've seen games when he's been in Cleveland. And now we're seeing games again when he's at Baltimore. When he decides that he wants to play, he is what you call a game wrecker, which means when you look at the stat line, you are really truly not going to know how effective this guy was and how much he wrecked the game until you watch it. He completely wrecked this game for the Chargers. He had Justin Herbert on the run. He had him off his back foot a lot. Bad throws, not to mention some of the drops on the side of the Chargers. I do want to give Justin Herbert some bail. There were a lot of drops on that side, but you couldn't run against them. You couldn't run to his side. You didn't want to throw to his side because he was just all over the place, just wrecking that game, and came on even stronger in the second half.
Alex, let's wrap up NFL Week 12 with the game ball. Who's getting your game ball this week?
That would be Jordan Love. I talked about it earlier. Prime time game, Thanksgiving game, all the lights, everybody. This is one of those games where the world is watching you. And he performed 22 of 32, 268, 3 touchdowns, no sacks, no interceptions, no turnovers. Basically, and also 3 carries for 39 yards. So he used his legs and he used his arm as well in terms of getting rid of the ball and making plays. The only knock I had on this entire game was that underthrown pass he had to Christian Watson, where it would have been a big, huge play and a touchdown play that he underthrew. However, kudos to him for showing Green Bay, for progressing over, I was saying, these last 2 to 3 weeks where he's looked a lot better week to week to week, to hold on to a job and make Green Bay think long and hard about if they should be looking at a quarterback in this upcoming draft.
Alex, my game ball is going to go to another quarterback that played on Thanksgiving, and that's Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott. He went 22 for 32, 331 yards, and some big-time throws in this game. I mean, he threaded the needle out there, 4 touchdowns, no picks, and rushed for 10 yards. Now, PGF Nation knows I've been pretty hard on Dak over the years, but he was lights out on Thanksgiving, and he deserves credit for this one because he played a nearly perfect game. Quite frankly, Washington never had a chance in this game. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. I personally love the Pick'em game. Just pick between 2 and 5 players to build a Pick'em entry. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. You can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Download the Underdog Fantasy app and sign up today with promo code PGF. That's promo code PGF to get your first deposit doubled up to $100. The official ticketing app of Pint Glass Football is now SeatGeek. I can't recommend them enough, guys. I've been using SeatGeek for years. You want to go to a game this season? SeatGeek is here to take the confusion out of buying tickets, making sure you get the best seats at the best prices. With SeatGeek, you'll never have to worry about overpaying for tickets again. How? They put a 0 to 10 score on each ticket, so you know you're getting a good deal. But here's the real game changer. You can get $20 off your first ticket purchase with the code PGFPOD. That's right, $20 off with code PGFPOD. This season, make every game day epic with SeatGeek. download the SeatGeek app, and remember to enter the code PGFPOD to grab your $20 discount. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Every week, it seems like there's a player, a coach, a ref, somebody who does something in the NFL or college football that becomes a WTF moment of the week.
Oh, fuck.
I've got one this week, Alex. My WTF moment of the week is going to go to Bills head coach Sean McDermott. And it's for his time management decisions, if you will. He wasted a timeout in an attempt to ice the Eagles kicker when he lined up for a 59-yard game-tying attempt in the rain that left the Bills with just one timeout. Now, why is that vital? Because Sean McDermott then decided, after burning that timeout, he decides to have Josh Allen kneel with 20 seconds left in regulation rather than attempt to drive into field goal range. Now, I know it's only 20 seconds, but you have one of the most talented quarterbacks in the NFL who's not only athletic and can run around, but and by time, he has a cannon for an arm. Why would you not give this guy a chance for a last-second game-winning field goal in regulation? With 20 seconds, if you don't burn that timeout, you would have had 2 timeouts with 20 seconds. Look, it's not impossible that they could have set up a couple big chunk plays there and put your kicker in a position to win the game in regulation. I absolutely hated this decision from Sean McDermott. It was ultra conservative. As soon as that kick went through the uprights, I think myself, Alex, I'm sure you did, and a lot of other people, I think we knew the second the Eagles made that kick, they were going to win that game in overtime. With apologies to the Cowboys and Lions, I think these are the two best teams in the NFC, maybe the two best teams in the entire NFL. 49ers, Eagles, this is a huge, huge game. 49ers are coming off of a 31-13 win against the Seahawks. The Eagles are coming off of that 37-34 win against the Buffalo Bills in overtime. And it brings me to the Twitter poll question of the week. Because I asked you guys, PGF Nation, who wins in week 13, 49ers or Eagles? Got hundreds of votes on this. 49ers are getting 56% of the vote last I checked. Eagles, 44% of the vote. Pretty split. I expected that it would be. We've got two great teams here. Alex, who do you like in this matchup?
I'm taking the Eagles, and I'm taking the Eagles because of Jalen Carter in their front line. I think this is the game where that front line gets that, excuse me, that offensive line, specifically the middle of that offensive line where Jalen Carter has just been wreaking havoc against whoever he has gone against. I think the middle of that offensive line is just simply going to have all type of problems, and Brock Purdy is going to be on the run all night long. Because one thing that we can say, and two things for sure, Trent Williams is not moving inside to try and block him, and neither is Jalen Carter moving outside to have to deal with him. So they don't even have to move him around because he's playing on the interior. And in that interior, I think we're going to see, you know what? How about take a prop bet that Brock Purdy has 20-plus yards rushing because he's simply going to get flushed out of that pocket a lot. Now, what I will say is Kyle Shanahan is going to be clever enough to scheme up something for Brandon Ayuk to get into that backfield and cause a lot of issues, and look for George Kittle, who's kind of had a slow game for probably for about the last 3 weeks, to light up the middle, those linebackers and those safeties that cannot cover those linebackers. So look for Brandon Ayuk to maybe only have about three catches, but one of them being a big catch for a touchdown, and then George Kittle to eat a lot in the middle of that field, and then you mix in a little bit of Debo. But I definitely don't believe they're going to be able to run a lot with Christian McCaffrey. But I think with George Kittle, with Brandon Ayuk, they're going to be able to do a lot of different things. I would actually go on the over, whatever. I'm not sure what the prop bet is on Christian McCaffrey catches. I would definitely take the over in this situation.
I like that you're thinking betting here, because that's kind of the angle I'm looking at too, Alex. Now, when this line opened, it opened at Eagles as a 2.5-point favorite. The line has now swung all the way to 49ers as a 2.5-point favorite. That's a 5-point swing. And for people who follow betting, that is crazy. The only time we see line movement like this is when the professional bettors are hammering one side. I came into this game, I was with you, Alex. My initial thought was Eagles at home, that's who I'm taking. But now looking at the betting lines and knowing that the really sharp bettors are all over the 49ers in this game, I'm really kind of looking at this differently. It's got me really rethinking this a little bit. The Niners are the healthier team, and this is a revenge spot, similar to what the Eagles felt a couple weeks ago versus the Chiefs. When a team knocks you out of the playoffs, especially a championship or Super Bowl, you know that they have this one circled on the calendar. I want to go Eagles here. I really do. My gut is telling me Eagles. To your points, I think the Eagles, the roster, that D-line, they're going to have some things. They're going to be able to put pressure on Purdy in this offense. But I can't ignore the pros here in that 5-point swing. I mean, that is a massive amount of line movement in just a couple days. I'm going to take the Niners here in what might just be the game of the year. Excited to be joined by Max Chadwick, who's a college football analyst for Pro Football Focus and the host of Preferred Walk-On, the official college football show of PFF. Max, excited to have you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome, man. Thanks so much for having me on again.
Yeah, excited to bring you back on. College football, regular season wrapped up. What a year, but now it gets really exciting, right? We've got championship games coming up. We've got the college football playoff taking focus here. Want to jump into some of these topics with you. I want to start with some news here, though. Mm-hmm. Michigan State hires Jonathan Smith from Oregon State. Mississippi State hires Jeff Lebby from Oklahoma. And Texas A&M hires Mike Elko from Duke. Max, grade these hires for me.
Ooh. Good question. All right, so I would start off with the big one, which is Texas A&M hiring Mike Elko. I'm going to give that an A, honestly. I think that that's as good of a hire as you can expect. This is a guy who is familiar with the program, obviously. He was Jimbo Fisher's defensive coordinator for 4 seasons at Texas A&M before taking the Duke job. And look, Duke, in the 2 years before they hired Mike Elko, they were 5-18 combined in those 2 seasons. And then right when he got there, this Duke team immediately turned it around and became a a school that a team that you need to be reckoned with. You know, they are 9-4 in his first year, 7-5 this year. And keep in mind, Riley Leonard was hurt for a few games this year as well. So they could have been better if Riley Leonard never went down with an injury. So you go from a 5-18 program in the 2 years before Mike Elko to a 16-9 program in the 2 years that he was there, basically with the same roster. That's really impressive. And I think a Texas A&M team that has a lot of talent on that roster. In fact, I think it has playoff caliber talent on that roster right now. They just haven't executed at a high enough level. You get a guy in Mike Elko who executes at a very high level. I think it's a really good hire. Again, he's familiar with the program. He's familiar with the NIL, which is a very critical part of that job is NIL, with how much money that those boosters have, as evidenced by their willingness to pay $76 million to Jimbo Fisher to not coach there anymore. So yeah, that's a great hire. Going on to Jonathan Smith, I think it's another A plus hire, honestly. He's a phenomenal coach, obviously, at Oregon State. He kind of was the golden boy there as the Oregon State quarterback, and it just sucks that he had to leave there. But at the same time, Oregon State was kind of left without a home after this year, obviously the Pac-12 crumbling and them being one of the two schools left behind. So it makes sense that he wants to secure a spot at a premier conference. And Michigan State is still a really good job. I know they haven't really been good in the last couple of years, but this is still a team that made the college football playoff not that long ago. They made a run a couple of years ago with Kenneth Walker as well. It is possible to win at Michigan State, and I think Jonathan Smith will do a good job there and kind of reestablish their identity as a physical football team, which is what Oregon State has been. And when Michigan State is at its best, that's what they've been as well, as a physical football team. So I think that's a great hire. Another one, again, the Jeff Lebby hire. I don't know. I'm not going to give him an A or A plus because I think Mike Elko and Jonathan Smith deserve that. But I'll give the Jeff Lebby hire. I'll give it a solid B, B plus. I think that's a really solid hire. This is a Mississippi State team that obviously under Mike Leach was a very offensive minded team. This past year, obviously after Mike Leach's unfortunate passing, Zach Arnett, their defensive coordinator, was the head coach. They kind of lost their way offensively. In fact, they were like one of the outside the top 110 offenses in the country this year. Now you get a guy in Jeff Lebby who, even though I don't even think Oklahoma's offense is that talented, and they still had a top five offense in the country in terms of efficiency. So that's really impressive, and I think Jeff Lebby is a great hire for them to try to get back to their air raid route.
Max, I want to get your thoughts on the Heisman race here, because this is a race that felt pretty wide open most of the year. There's kind of been a few guys kind of at or near the top, but there really hasn't been that slam dunk guy that has just really locked it down. Bo Nix right now is the favorite according to Vegas, but then you've got Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, I think are still in play for the award, especially with some of these big games still to come. Who would get your vote right now?
For me right now, it's not even close, and it's Jaden Daniels. I think Jaden Daniels has been quite easily the best quarterback and quite easily the best player in college football this year. I think as a passer, he's been just as good, if not better, than Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr., or even if you want to give him slightly worse, I'll give you that, but he's been on that level as them. And the difference is that Penix does not run. Bo Nix can run, but he doesn't do it. Jaden Daniels runs for over 1,000 yards this year. He's one of the top dual threat quarterbacks in the country. That's the difference. Jaden Daniels, what he's done this year is absolutely ridiculous. In fact, you know, you look at the passing yards and the leaders in passing yards this year among quarterbacks. Michael Penix Jr. has the most, Bo Nix is second, and then Jaden Daniels is third. And Jaden Daniels only has 41 fewer passing yards than Bo Nix. And then he also has less than 100 fewer than Michael Penix Jr. But Jaden Daniels also leads the nation in passing touchdowns this year as well. Bo Nix is a guy that doesn't throw the ball downfield that much. Jaden Daniels has been one of the best deep ball throwers in college football this season. And like I said before, that running ability has really pushed him over the edge. And I think what he's done this year has been on like a level that we haven't really seen before. And you look at his rushing stats, he has 1,250 rushing yards this season. That is 180 more than any other quarterback in college football. So you're talking about a guy who's already a top three passer in the country, at minimum top three. If not, you could argue number two or number one. And then he's also by far the best runner in the country at the position. I quite literally don't care what you think about, you know, his 9-3 record. That has nothing to do with him. LSU has the best offense in college football this year because of Jaden Daniels. And the only reason why they have three losses is because the defense was absolutely atrocious this year. So listen, I understand most Heisman Trophy winners come from playoff teams or national championship contending teams. But we've had it before. Caleb Williams last year won the Heisman Trophy, even though they didn't make the playoff. And that's mainly because of the defense. 9-3 teams before have done it too. Lamar Jackson won a Heisman Trophy going 9-3 that year. Or Robert Griffin III won a Heisman Trophy going 9-3 that year. There is precedent for a 9-3 team to produce a Heisman Trophy winner. And listen, I understand most voters might vote for whoever wins the Pac-12 title game between Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. But in my opinion, that would be a massive, massive mistake. And I think we'll go down. If Jaden Daniels does not win the Heisman Trophy this year, I think it'll go down as one of the worst robs of a Heisman Trophy that we've ever seen. Like on par with guys like Christian McCaffrey when Derrick Henry won it over him, guys like that. So I think right now, in my opinion, I don't even think it's close. I think Jaden Daniels is far and away the Heisman Trophy winner, but I don't know if most Heisman voters will agree with me on that.
You've got Oregon, Alabama, Texas, and now Ohio State, all with just one loss. Who's the best one-loss team in the country?
Ooh, good question. I would say Ohio State, I would still say, is the best one-loss team, although Alabama's really looked good lately. But I would say Ohio State, Alabama, Oregon, and then Texas. I would order in that order. But that doesn't mean Ohio State has the best chance to make the playoff out of the one-loss teams. In fact, I think they have by far the worst chance of making the playoff out of the one-loss teams right now. But if you're asking me just purely who's the best team on a neutral field right now, I think Ohio State is probably my pick out of those teams to be the best team on a neutral field.
I think you can make a case for any of these teams, quite frankly, but I hear what you're saying with Ohio State. This is a really, really good football team, and I think it's even more proof, not to get off topic here, but I think it's even more proof of why I cannot wait to go to this 12-team playoff format, because we just can't have teams this good on the outside looking in when they're a legitimate national championship contending team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's – if there's any argument for a 12-team playoff, it's certainly this year, at least an 8-team playoff, because I mean, we're heading into conference championship Saturday, and there are 8 teams that are still alive for the Final Four, in my opinion. So it's kind of insane. It's going to be an unbelievable weekend of college football, and we might actually have some massive debates over who should be in the college football playoff, because I don't think it's cut and dry in a lot of scenarios. So, yeah, it should be a very interesting weekend, and yeah, it definitely helps the argument for an expanded playoff for sure.
Yeah, you are not kidding. And it leads me perfectly to this follow-up question here. After losing their star quarterback, Jordan Travis, to injury, Florida State, if they're able to stay undefeated, win the ACC, is there any chance, any scenario that you could see them actually getting bumped out of the CFP for a one-loss team because of the unique circumstances with that injury?
I mean, I can see it happening in terms of the committee doing it and arguing that. But I can tell you right now, if they do that, it's an absolute abomination. And I think it would be, if Tallahassee rioted in the streets, I would not blame them at all. Because you have a 13-0 Power 5 champion. I don't care who their quarterback is. I don't care if I'm their quarterback. They get into the college football playoff. The college football playoff should be for the four most deserving teams. And you cannot tell me that an undefeated Power 5 champion is not one of the four most deserving teams, no matter who is their quarterback. And I hate that argument of, oh, well, they're just going to get blown out by Georgia anyways. It's like, okay, well, who's to say that Texas is not getting blown out or anything like that? It shouldn't be about who you think are the four best teams. It should be who proved it and who deserves it the most. I'd much rather watch Florida State got blown out by 40 against Georgia, then Texas lose by 7 to Georgia, because I can know in my heart that Florida State deserved to make it over Texas. If Florida State wins, they absolutely need to be in the college football playoff. In fact, there's never been in the playoffs 10-year history now, there's never been a undefeated Power 5 champion that didn't get into the playoff. In fact, there's only one time where a one-loss Power 5 champion didn't get in. And that was when Baylor and TCU in 2014 shared the Big 12 title because there wasn't any Big 12 championship game that season. So, and even that year, if you look back, one loss Ohio State was on their third string quarterback in Cardale Jones. And the argument was you can't put in Ohio State. They have a third string quarterback. They're not going to be able to compete with Alabama or Oregon or Florida State or whoever. They beat Alabama. Then they beat Oregon. They won the national championship. Do I think Florida State would do the same thing with Tate Rodemaker? I don't know, and probably not. But you can't say, oh, well, I definitely know that. You have to put him in. If you know, Ohio State did it before with a third string quarterback. Who's to say Florida State can't do it with a backup quarterback? So the college football playoff isn't about the four best teams, in my opinion. It's about the four most deserving teams. And a 13-0 Power 5 champion has to get into the college football playoff. If Florida State loses to Louisville, they're not making it. There's no chance they make it. But if they beat Louisville, man, I mean, that is further proof that they can do it. And yeah, I don't think it's even a discussion. They have to get into the college football playoff as a 13-0 Power 5 champion.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. And I think they will. I don't think there's a scenario. There has been some buzz about people saying, like, could it happen? I wanted to get your thoughts on it because it's an interesting debate from the standpoint, and you really hit on it there. Most deserving versus the four best. Because I think sometimes we look at this and we think, okay, well, I want the four best teams in. And I get that. But how do you leave out an undefeated team?
Yeah, Alabama last year had two losses and everyone's like, oh, they're one of the four best teams. It's like, okay, so you're going to put them over TCU who like went undefeated in the regular season? Like that's when it's like, all right, why even play the games? And why not just say, oh, these are the four best teams by the betting odds and whatever. Let's just put them in the playoff and just not even play the regular season. So that's why to me it's like, okay, why even play the games if you're going to say, oh, they're not one of the four best teams even though they've never lost a game? Like I think that's ridiculous.
You can't do it. Like you said, you can't leave them out. If they go undefeated, I don't care if it's their third string quarterback, you got to get them into the playoff. Although it is kind of one of those situations where if they get destroyed in the first round, people, you know where the talk is going to be. Everyone's going to be saying, you know, this is why you got to put the four best teams in, blah, blah, blah. It's going to go on and on. This is, once again, we have to get to this expanded playoff. This is just another great reason, right?
Right, exactly. But it's like, okay, you want to make that argument of, oh, they got blown out. See, I told you so. Man, every single semifinal has been a blowout, essentially. So it's like, if you want to make that argument, it's like, okay, well, this is not like it's a different thing. It's not like we're seeing a new thing. Like, college playoff semifinals have been, like, known for being blowouts a lot of the time. So, again, I would really want to see Florida State in the playoff if they beat Louisville. If they don't beat Louisville, absolutely, they don't deserve to be in the playoff. But if they beat Louisville, You can't leave them out, man. Because then who's to say that they wouldn't make a magical run and win it all? And they deserve to be in, obviously, if they win. Who's to say that they wouldn't do that? So I think if you leave them out of the playoff as a 13-0 Power 5 champion, I know UCF made the national champion banners in 2017. Everyone kind of poked fun at it. If Florida State made it after being left out, I wouldn't poke fun at it. I'd be like, you know what? I can't tell you you're wrong. You deserve to be in there, and they didn't put you in there. So, yeah, I think it'll be one of the biggest what-ifs ever is if Florida State gets left out of it. So, yeah, I don't think the committee would do that, and I really, really disagree with anyone who says that the committee should do that if Florida State does win against Louisville.
Let's take a look at the championship games coming up because, man, we've got some good ones here. Knowing that Oregon and Washington are now going to be playing for the Pac-12 title, Georgia and Alabama for the SEC, Texas-Oklahoma State for the Big 12 title, Michigan-Iowa for the Big 10, Florida State and Louisville, like you mentioned, for the ACC title. Michigan is a heavy favorite. I think we're going to skip over that one. No, sorry, Hawkeye fans, no disrespect. I don't think we need to talk about that one. But we've already talked about FSU, so we'll kind of skip over them too. So let's look at these three that I think are the most interesting. Can Oklahoma State upset Texas? Like, what kind of chance do you give them there? Can Alabama upset Georgia? And who wins the Pac-12 rematch? A lot to unpack there, but break it down for me.
Yeah, so I think you look at the Big 12 game first. I think first and foremost for Texas, what they need to do, and first and foremost for Oklahoma State, what they need to do is be able to run the ball. Ollie Gordon II has been the engine of that offense, but the problem is Texas' defense has a phenomenal defensive line led by Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy, by far the best defensive tackle duo in the country. I think they still are the two highest graded defensive tackles in the country. They've had a really good, they're 21st in the country in run defense grade this year. It's going to be tough sledding. You look at the other games, you look at the Pac-12 game, Oregon-Washington. Oregon right now is 9.5-point favorites over Washington, which I think is a little crazy, especially because Washington beat them earlier in the year. And I understand Washington has played every game since then very close, while Oregon has played every game since then as a blowout. But I do think Oregon's going to win. I think they're the more complete team than Washington. I think they Offensively, they're even more complete than Washington. Their offensive line's phenomenal. Bo Nix is obviously, mentioned before, he's a Heisman favorite right now. Bucky Irving is a phenomenal running back. They got a great receiving core as well. Should be a high-scoring game for sure. But I do think I trust Oregon's defense more than Washington's defense, and I think Oregon will get revenge on the Huskies and win that game. And what's essentially is basically a college football playoff quarterfinal game between those two teams. The winner of that game is assured of a playoff spot. And then obviously the big one is Georgia-Alabama, which is going to be a lot of fun. Maybe the most one of the most anticipated conference title games I can remember. Georgia's favored by 6 right now. I haven't decided fully yet, but I think I'm going to side with Georgia. I really like the way they're playing. Carson Beck has been one of the hottest quarterbacks in the country down the stretch of the season. Jalen Milroe, though, has also been one of the hottest quarterbacks in the country down the stretch of the season as well. So it should be a great game. Two elite defenses as well. But I do think Georgia, I trust that Georgia will be able to get it done in Atlanta, too. A little bit of home field advantage there. But I think Georgia will beat Alabama, and I think it'll be a really, really close game. But that one, to me, is a little bit of a toss-up. I truly don't know who's gonna win that game.
All I know is I can't wait to watch them. I'm sure you can't either. Once again, guys, we've been joined by Max Chadwick, college football analyst for Pro Football Focus and the host of Preferred Walk-On, the official college football show of PFF. Be sure to check out his work at pff.com, and his show is on YouTube or listen on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Max, great stuff. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much for having me on.
We didn't have a lock of the week segment last episode with the holiday. You know, we had the shortened episode like we talked about, but we made some betting picks on the Thanksgiving Day games. We both took the 49ers -7. I took the Lions -7. You took the Packers +7. You were on the other side in that game. We both took the under 46. We both took Cowboys and laid the 11 points. And we both took the over 47. And Alex, you threw in the prop bet of the year and bet Deron Bland with a pick. That's a combined 8-3 last week, Alex. We crushed it on Thanksgiving. Let's keep it going here. Who you got, Alex? Who's your lock of the week?
I am taking the Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals and the 5.5 points away playing the Steelers. The over under 40.5, I'm going to stay away from that, but I'm definitely going to take the 5.5 points with little Kyler running around and making some things happen. That team has been playing tough, and I feel the hot streak that we just came off of, and I've been on a little hot streak myself calling a few things. I'm going to go ahead and take Kyler Murray and the Cardinals to 5.5 in a close game, because even though the Steelers have a good defense, they don't have a good offense. And even though it looked good last week, that's just because it was new, it was fresh. Now let's see what they do this week. So I'm taking the Cardinals.
I'm taking the Lions, and I'm going to lay the 4 points versus the Saints. I talked about the Saints team earlier. They're terrible. And I think this is a big bounce back spot for Detroit here. They had an embarrassing performance in primetime with the whole country watching in that Thanksgiving Day game. And those are the type of games that usually we see a big bounce back spot, a focused team coming out of a game like that, going up against this bad Saints team that struggles in the red zone. I mentioned it earlier. Now, the Saints defense, overrated. This is not the defense we thought it would be coming into the year. I think this Lions team is going to be able to move the ball. I think they're going to struggle to stop the Lions, who are actually a great red zone team. I think that's the difference in this game. I think the Lions get more touchdowns, the Saints settle for field goals, and the Lions cover. If you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That is going to do it, guys, for today's episode, PGF Nation. Once again, I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter @PGF Podcast.